Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup, oh, blocked by James! It's over, Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton, some rhythm,
and he got it, young boy! Continues to wear them out!
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Carter Rodriguez is away on paternity leave. I am excited to announce that he is now a father. Him and his wife gave birth to a beautiful baby girl, and I could not be happier for my brother. So all the best to him. But filling in for him today, friend of the pod, making his return, Evan Damrell from Forbes and the new host of Locked On Cavs. How you doing, buddy?
I'm not too bad, not too bad. Yeah, congrats to Carter for real. I know he was real stressed about Millie coming into the world. God, I'm such a bad friend. Every time I'm like on the spot thinking of her name, I'm like, what the hell did he name her? But no, for
just,
real.
Just the way to think of it is, yeah, I like to Millie Rod.
There you go. But no, I'm happy to be here. The Cavs are on a 3-game win streak. They just got to play bad teams for the rest of the season, and the good times will be back.
But we are 8-5 against teams with losing records. How about that, man?
I mean, yeah, it could be worse. It's like at the start of the year, and you mentioned Locked On Cavs. I was on before I was co-hosting. Chris had me on. And I said, you know, people might want to pump the brakes a little bit because the good times are about to stop when they play all of these championship and playoff teams. But hey, take them while you can. 8-5 is something you can definitely write home about. Merry Christmas to all Cleveland fans. The Browns aren't making the playoffs, but the Cavs will probably be back before then. So there you go.
Yeah, we have a ton to dive into today. I'm actually really excited to be talking about this. This will be our, for those that are wondering, just an administrative note, this is going to be our one podcast for this week. I want to wish everybody a happy holidays. If you want to help with Carter's diaper bills and all that, and you want to give the podcast a trade or a gift, I'd like to encourage everyone to go check out our premium feed. Just Google Chase Down Premium. Try it for 99 cents for the first month. If you don't love it, cancel. And then $5 a month from that moving forward. It's basically like Patreon if you want to support us directly. So I just want to give that a little bit of a plug on the front end, especially because we don't have any ad reads today. So I know everyone's very heartbroken over that. But yes, the Cavs have won 3 straight games. And the big news, though, of the night, and the news that actually impacts the long term of this team, is that Jordan Clarkson is no longer a member of the Cleveland Cavaliers. He was traded to the Utah Jazz in exchange for Dante Exum, as well as 2 second-round picks. Evan, we were about to get into this before we started recording, but I want to get what your immediate reaction was when you saw that news come across your phone.
It was more so like a, really? Because, you know, Utah wasn't a team I was expecting for sure. And then the actual package that the Cavs got for Jordan Clarkson seemed a little underwhelming at first. And I did a little bit of a deep dive on it for Forbes. And I got it up, you know, to get that sweet, sweet aggregation. But
Yeah, get those plugs in.
Yeah, exactly.
It.
No problem. And I just breaking it down, you know, Dante Exum – let me give a quick shout out to my guy, Ben Dowsett. He gave me, I literally jumped in his DMs and I said, I'll admit, I haven't watched much Dante Exum tape. Want to give me some insight on how he's looked this season? And he's just more or less said he's long and tall, fast off the dribble, and potentially could be an elite defender. And I think he's 24 years old. So he kind of meshes in with Cleveland's timeline right now. But the caveat is he has no confidence with the ball at all. According to Ben, does not have a good NBA handle and he can't shoot. So maybe there's something there. I don't know.
He sounds like a larger Delly is what is being described, or at least Delly back when he was good defensively. Here's the thing. So Carter and I had talked about on the podcast where what we wanted as a return for Jordan Clarkson, I think we said 2 second round picks was what we wanted to get.
Yeah.
You get a player that there's even a 5% chance that this could be interesting or that is somewhat worth caring about and keeping an eye on. I think that's encouraging. You look at the last couple of years, he is a good defensive player, and as Ben mentioned correctly, he does have that potential to be an elite defensive player. Big guard at 6'5 with a massive wingspan, but just hasn't had consistent minutes.
Yeah.
And some of that is he hasn't earned it. He hasn't been aggressive enough consistently in the minutes that he's got. The other part is they are on a different timeline. They are considering themselves to be contenders, and I think that's part of why they've made kind of a bit of a panic move here for Clarkson. And to get a large guard that we know is going to be able to play good defense, that can fit with any of the Cavs guards, whether that be Sexton, Garland, KPJ, that's a nice little piece there. And he's a low usage guy that might help you and prevent you from having to play Dele a whole lot more.
No, yeah, I would agree with that for sure. And maybe it's an Australian thing for point guards that can't shoot, Ben Simmons included. I'm getting all my shots off tonight.
Like it. Oh, do you want me to get one in too? I want to join in on the fun.
Yeah.
I wonder how Jordan Clarkson feels going from a college offense to a high school offense. I love shitting on the Quinn Snyder offense. I hate it so much.
I do too. It's no fun at all to watch. But to be fair, Clarkson could give them a bit of a punch because in my haphazard research, I learned that the Jazz are the second worst scoring bench in the NBA. And, you know, JC can add a little bit of a wrinkle to that, at least. I mean, until something gives. But you also did point out, was it you or somebody else who pointed out that Donovan Mitchell and Jordan Clarkson have a lot of overlap, too? So, I mean, it's just like
that would have been me. Well, it's perfect because now when Donovan Mitchell goes to the bench, it's a seamless transition right there. You got to love that.
Yeah, that's true.
No, but in all seriousness, I do think that Jordan Clarkson, him leaving, is likely going to make the Cavs a worse team in the short term here.
Oh, definitely.
I do think that he can help out the Jazz. I think he's kind of been a little underrated just because of how steep his contract is. But as an expiring player, that's a not bad guy to take a chance on if you're the Jazz. Wow. The flip side of that coin is – this move really does open up opportunities and provide some usage to the Cavs trio of the young guards. And
I agree.
For them to really make that point for us tonight against the Atlanta Hawks, the three of them combining for 61 points, I mean, you're going to have times where they shoot you out of a game, but that also happened with Clarkson. And I would 100% take Darius Garland out there in the closing minutes of a game and learning from that experience and KPJ being out there with Sexton. I would take that over Jordan Clarkson make or miss any day of the week.
No, I totally agree with that. Cause you don't know 100% if all three of these guys are in your 100% long-term future plans for this team. But for the time being, you got to see what you have with them. Cause if one of them becomes expendable, or like we say, there's a bit of an overlap between Sexton and Garland a little bit, like you can kind of shuffle the deck a little bit and then maybe plug in one of these guys to be more so taking over in that scoring role for Clarkson. And I noted this in my reaction as well. Dylan Windler, even though he's an enigma and hasn't played yet this year, this opens up an opportunity for him to get minutes out the gate too, and to see what the Cavs get with him as well, because there was a bit of a question where I think it was Fedor who said one of the things holding Dylan Windler back from his debut is Kevin Porter keeps consistently playing well every night, that it's going to eat into their minutes. And Bayline, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but he did have Clarkson playing small forward every now and then too. So you can have Windler sop up a little bit of those minutes until he gets comfortable with it as well. So, I mean, I think the young guy, it's going to hurt the Cavs offensively because Clarkson was averaging, I believe, I'm looking at it now. He was averaging 14.6 a game for the Cavs this year.
Mm-hmm. But that was in limited minutes. Like you look at per 36, it was damn near 24.
Yeah, for sure. But that scoring punch is definitely the lack of that's going to hurt. And then especially if the Cavs start shipping off veterans like Kevin Love, and if Tristan Thompson has to go too, like there's going to be a lot of a void to fill. And I'm totally fine with letting the kids just kind of go out there and learn from their mistakes and just get better on a day-to-day basis instead of, you know, slowly biding our time and towing the line of this weird construction of a team of veterans and then a bunch of young guys. So,
yeah. No kidding. I think Dylan Windler was going to get minutes no matter what, just because it's him and Jetty as the only small forwards on the team. But I think what this really does is it solidifies that Kevin Porter Jr. is going to be a permanent part of this rotation for the rest of the season.
Which makes me super glad, because Chris and I talked about it, and this is the episode coming out tomorrow. It's just, God, he's been such a pleasant surprise this entire year. And I'm so happy to eat crow on him because he's just played so well.
Dude, he's ahead of schedule. Like, I think I was probably higher on KPJ than most, and he's exceeded my expectations. His activity, like, he has the potential to be a dynamic two-way player. You see his impact on the glass, his active hands. I think my favorite possession of the game from him, and there were many, but was after he turned the ball over. I think he had made a three on the previous possession, turned the ball over his next time down the court, but then he ran back, poked the ball loose, and then generated a fast break opportunity the other way. And that type of energy and the activity that he brings to the lineup, it was infectious. Like,
yeah, no, it was.
I think they got out and ran tonight to some extent because that's the style the Hawks play, and the Cavs aren't really at a point where their guards are capable of dictating the terms of engagement there. But at the same time, I think when you have these young guys out there that like to get out and run, I think it kind of forces the team to play a style that they should be playing all along.
No, I totally agree. And it's just, hey, more opportunity. Like, Kevin Porter, for me, I remember reading at the beginning of the year, they said he is talented enough to be playing meaningful minutes for the Cavs from opening night, but because of those maturity concerns and the fact that he is a pretty raw prospect, that he might be spending more time in Canton, it's all just kind of working out real nicely for him. And it's just
like, I would pray for the guys in the G League if he was in Canton. He is not at that point.
No. Like, that's like you said, he's a little ahead of schedule than we thought. And I'm like I just said earlier, I'm totally fine with eating crow on it too, but
I don't think you have to. I mean,
it's just, he was
drafted 30th, man. Like, there were valid concerns, but
yeah,
drafting is it's an inexact science here. We're wrong on guys all the time. It's so hard to project what the developmental curve is, but the thing that I like is that when he makes mistakes, it's in an attempt to do the right things. He's trying to make the right plays. He's playing team basketball. Even though his assist totals aren't high, the passes and reads he does make are really good. And you look at this last week, and I talked about it a little bit in the youth report there on our premium feed. But this past week, the past four games, the young guys have really played well. Like, even though Sexton's not hitting threes, he's assertive. He's playing in a north-south game. Darius Garland is starting to look like the guy that we were hoping. Jetty Osmond's been very good. And KPJ is, as we've mentioned, playing with a lot of activity and turning some heads.
Oh, yeah, I would agree. And it's just, maybe this is just what we needed a little bit after watching the Cavs get the doors blown off them a few times. Just watch them play three bad teams three nights in a row and just get a couple just quality wins. Albeit this one against Atlanta did get a little dicey for a second, and
the Hornets did as well.
Yeah. To be fair, that's also fair. But like, my brother is a very casual basketball fan, and usually he gets his info from me. And then he's like, so is Atlanta any good? And I'm like, no, they're like one of the worst defensive teams in the league. So maybe Cleveland's going to blow them out. And then he like looks over at me when Atlanta has a decent lead, and he said, I thought Atlanta was the worst defensive team in the league. And I'm just like, all right, well, now I look like an idiot. But
I mean, they were basically the Spider-Man meme when it comes to defensive effectiveness on this night. And it's funny because you look, when the Cavs got that late fourth quarter lead that they choked away, I think some of that had to do with the pace that we were talking about a little earlier, where Cavs got out and ran, they generated easy opportunities. But then when it came time to actually bring the ball up the court and execute, especially when they were pressing, that's when you start to fall apart. And yes, some of it has to do with inexperience. But the rest is just focus. Like, there were unforced errors there. They were pressing a little bit. And I think that is something that I'd like to see them work on a little bit more, especially if now you're going to have Darius Garland in there, who, yes, Jordan Clarkson makes confounding decisions late in games, but Garland's inexperience with Sexton's inexperience relative to the rest of the league, out there in those closing moments, and Tristan Thompson that has limitations, and Jetty that's not exactly the most confident dribbler. You're going to need those guards to step up in a big way if you don't want to have more of these late collapses anytime the Cavs actually do have a lead.
No, I would definitely agree with that. There's going to be – Clarkson was a blessing and a curse, and actually, admittedly, wasn't the biggest fan of his game for most of the time he was in Cleveland, but maybe it's because I got to know him a little bit personally this season in the locker room and stuff. But, like, I am a little sad to see him go. But I know long-term this is going to benefit the Cavs. And we didn't even, like, break down the other components of this trade package because we're just talking about losing Clarkson and getting something from Dante Exum. But it's just – yeah, it's just going to be a little tough. Hopefully Dellavedova and Knight are ready to step up a little bit in those reserve guard roles. And then maybe we'll see if Dante's available to play out the gates, because he's gotten a lot of DNP coaches decisions, so I think he's healthy at this point, but we will see what happens. But hey, I mean, more the merrier. I'm okay with if the Cavs get killed some nights, as long as the kids are out there and learning from it. I mean, it's gonna shorten John Beilein's lifespan ever so much, because that is a man who hates winning. And I told Chris offhand, I said, you know, buddy, you signed up for this. Like, to myself, one game the Cavs were steamrolled, and he was visibly annoyed doing the post game presser with us. And I'm just like thinking, like, man, you signed up for this, dude. Like,
yeah, no, absolutely.
As Tyler would say. So,
hey, man, there's going to be some lessons when it comes to the Renaissance, as John Beilein called it. But yeah, let's get into some of those extra assets, because I thought it was funny. We were on the same wavelength and discussed this a little bit on Twitter before coming on the pod. But yes, they get two future second round picks. In addition to that, Bobby Marks has pointed out that Cleveland will create a $3.83 million trade exception and go from $1.3 million to $5.1 million below the luxury tax. So they get a breathing room there. They get two future second-round picks. And while those picks are kind of down the line, I think it's important for people to note that those assets, you're not necessarily – there's no guarantee that you're even going to end up using them. But that's the type of thing that either helps you – maybe it helps you get something of real value back with Kevin Love, where you're not giving up a first-round pick. But you kind of swing the pot with some of those. It helps you move up in the draft. It helps you get into the draft, like we saw with the Kevin Porter Jr. scenario, where Cavs got some seconds for Rodney Hood and Alec Burks and those guys and cashed them in for KPJ. It's all about creating flexibility. So when you look at the things that the Cavs gain from this, it's opportunities for the young guys. It's flexibility from a cap perspective, both with the exception and the room under the luxury tax. And it's these assets that you have now in your back pocket to help facilitate another move.
No, I agree with that. And after kind of like digging around a little bit, I learned, and I'm sure it's out there by now, but it's a 2022 second round pick from San Antonio, and then a 2023 second round pick from Golden State. And I mean, they're both cheeks right now, both of those teams, but those are elite organizations. So you're not really going to be, I mean, you could hold on to them if you're Cleveland, because high schoolers will be available at that point in time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, you could take a gamble on with a late or mid to late second round pick at those times and draft a high schooler, stash him in Canton, see if you can get something out of him. Or like you said, just it's asset acquisition to maybe move Kevin Love without having to give up the first round pick, because word around the campfire is that's what teams are looking for to take on his contract. And
right. Which, again, I don't think the Cavs are going to move him unless they're actually gaining assets. There's exactly. No motivation for that.
It's counterproductive to the rebuild.
Right. If he's going to powder or whatever, it's too bad. This is what you signed up for. And to his credit, I think as the schedule is kind of lightened up, I think he's been playing well recently. And
yeah.
I think some of that is understanding you're going to need to actually perform if you want to move. The other part of it is he's a competitor, and I think part of why he was frustrated was the team was losing, and now they've had some opportunities to go out and win, and the effort level is there, and they've actually produced and come away with some wins here.
No, I would agree with that. And someone texted me, I think during the Memphis game, and just said, like, wow, Kevin seems like he's a lot more engaged and locked in. And I said, yeah, I think winning, well, let's just backtrack a little bit. The same person also said, like, he looks absolutely done. He's fed up, all these other things. And I said, yeah, well, you win a championship. It's been almost 4 years. Almost 4 years. And you, now you're in this situation and you agreed to stay on long-term, but it gets to you for a while. Like you said, he's a competitor and he's used to winning and having sustainable success, but it's just clearly he's at a different point in his career and Cleveland's at a different point in their rebuild that it's best for both parties to move on. And I know that people were playing body language police with him and noticing. And I think, like, and I told that person just to jump back. This is like, yeah, well, winning kind of fixes a lot of things. And 3 wins in a row just to, you know, build off of before they take the next few days off for Christmas definitely helps. And it's refreshing to see, because it was definitely a bummer to see Kevin Love just kind of mentally checked out, because it has an impact on the rest of the team. But when he is at least a little bit engaged and just operating, facilitating in the offense and just doing Kevin Love things, it's just a lot of fun to watch. And it helps the Cavs out long-term as well, because it boosts his trade stock. Because I remember people were overreacting when he was completely checked out and saying, like, oh, he has no trade value at this point. Like, the Cleveland would be lucky to get X, Y, and Z, or like Dragan Bender or something from Milwaukee. Oh my God.
No, I never want to hear Dragan Bender mentioned in a Cavs trade proposal ever again. I still have the scars from the Kyrie times there. But no, I completely agree. And I've mentioned this before, but when you're just giving so much effort and you're not winning, it's no surprise to see all of a sudden the effort part of that equation go away. And I think the opportunity to actually go in and win games was encouraging for them. And I find this whole matchup very intriguing, because obviously the Hawks have been without John Collins prior to this game. But this season really hasn't gone the way that some people expected. I thought that I didn't expect them to make the playoff leap just yet.
Same, but I thought they'd be better than they are now.
Yeah, I agree. And especially when you have Trae Young playing as well as he is. And I know people are going to mention the defense or whatever, but the amount that he's contributing on the offensive end should result in more wins. And I know people, whenever you're talking about a star or star in the making, it's, well, no, he's just got to do it all. No, I mean, even if you sub Luka in his place, yes, Luka is a much better player, but he's not going to help this team on the defensive end. They're still going to be absolutely awful. And I think that this is just a good reminder, especially when you're looking at the Cavs going through this rebuild, that when you are relying on a lot of young guys, even if they're putting up good numbers, even if they're capable of making defensive plays, the learning curve is so steep. And the teams that do have veterans have such an edge that it can take a while. It can take time to get through this. And you can add as many first-round picks as you want, but there's no shortcuts when it comes to building sustainable success.
No, I would totally agree. And it's I wouldn't even say it's a cultural thing in Atlanta, because I mean, I don't pay that close of attention to the Hawks, but I feel like everyone, I mean, I know Trae Young had a meltdown and said he needs help, and I, you know, made a little pot shot at him tonight after Garland crossed him over and said, you know, Trae Young might need a little help after that play. But it's just, I don't think it, yeah, no, I agree. Like, you have, so I'm looking at their roster right now. Like, was Kevin Huerter a first round pick, or was he a second round pick before I sound uneducated?
He was a first.
Okay, so you have Young, Huerter, Hunter, Collins, and I think, and those four, they're rookie sophomores. Reddish as well, but I'm just saying, like, the starting unit. Fernando's a rookie center, and he was starting for them too. You have Reddish, Jabari Parker's young, Alex Len is still relatively young, Bembry is young enough. I mean, Vince Carter is the only veteran of note that played minutes for the Hawks tonight, and I think this is just what you're gonna get. Like, you have a bunch of young guys, and like you said, experience is kind of the great equalizer in some of these situations to kind of like keep things in check with these young guys. But man, I mean, like we said, I thought they'd just kind of take the next leap forward, and John Collins being suspended definitely hurt them a lot.
Mm-hmm. But it's not like he's going to improve their defense a whole lot, right? Like,
no.
He's a liability on that end as well. And we talked about it a little bit in Discord, and I think Carter alluded to it as well in the timeline, but how different this would look if they used their second pick on Brandon Clark. Like, that's the other thing, is just, you have to make sure you're nailing these picks if you're going to rely on the young guys. And I think while there's no argument ever that Trey is a better player than Luka, I don't foresee that happening. I think Luka is clearly on another level. Maybe they got a little too cute with the Trey Young plus a future pick, but this is a much more interesting conversation if you just nail that second pick. But I think that's an example of, in the NBA, you always go with the sure thing. I hate to give credit to Bill Simmons, but I think he made the point of getting that dollar bill is different than having $1.25 and change, right? Like, you want to get the dollar bill, and then you figure out the rest from there.
Yeah, exactly. And I agree. And it just, I guess, to touch back on the point you made earlier, the draft is a crapshoot too. We think from the outside looking in that these players are surefire commodities, and I'm sure NBA teams are a lot more acquainted and more in depth than we are. I mean, Trevor Magnotti is the most in-depth person I've met when it comes to the draft, so he's an exception to the rule. But it's like you said, yeah, no, if the Cam Reddish pick just seems like a dud, especially because Brandon Clark is playing so well for Memphis, but
I mean, even if they took KPJ, I think it looks better. And like, I was out on Reddish. Like, that shouldn't be a surprise to anybody that listens to this podcast. I am so scared of guys that their rep is that they don't have a good motor.
It's terrifying.
And especially when you look at a guy that didn't finish well at the rim. Big surprise. He can't finish well at the rim now in the NBA.
Yeah.
Just not an efficient offensive player, and just makes confounding decisions out there. And I think that this was an example of a team that KPJ knows. There's a lot of teams that passed on him. Shit, even the Cavs passed on him twice, technically. Yeah. He's got a chip on his shoulder, and for him to go out there and clearly outshine Reddish, I think that probably meant something to him.
No, I would totally agree. And hey, I'm totally glad that KPJ is a Cavalier. And to share a little bit of like insider knowledge, I was talking to one of the players on the team, and I said, just like, it's one of the guys who comes off the bench for the Cavs. And I said, just how fun is it to play alongside Kevin Porter? I just asked him that blanket question. And they gave me really, really good insight on it, saying that Kevin is he was a top five talent in this draft. And his words, not mine, he said that whole thing at USC like was overblown and definitely bullshit. And you and I have talked about it before too. There's plenty of conspiracies about it. We don't have to touch on them too much, but it seems like it was a lot more over, like the character concerns coming out of Southern Cal are a lot more overblown than people made them out to be.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
this player went on to say that like sometimes in the draft, getting picked up by a team that wants you is so much better than being picked up by a team that just has to draft you because you're the best player available. And he said Kevin's the perfect example of that because he came to a team that wanted him badly, because it's well documented that Kobe Altman had quite a bit of a crush on Kevin Porter.
Yes.
And he's super tight with the Lindsey Gottlieb and other people in the coaching staff. He gets along. I mean, he gets along with everybody in the locker room from what I've seen. By all accounts, is a good kid from people I've talked to in the organization. I told Chris this yesterday. It's like a bit of the old man in me, but you just notice that this kid's 19 years old, and after he does an interview at practice with the press, he goes out of his way to shake hands with every single member of the media and thank them for taking the time to talk to them. Like, you don't really see that from a 19-year-old, and you definitely don't see that from an NBA player, but like, you can tell that he has a chip on his shoulder, that he should have been drafted higher, and he is a lot more talented than people let on. And I'm just happy he's here, because clearly he is just him. He himself is happier. And I think we talked about like a culture and everything. I think Cleveland's coaching staff has done a good job building a culture for these young guys. Mm-hmm. But I think having veterans like Tristan, who's the more vocal leader of the bunch, and then you have Kevin, who kind of sits in the background, but he's still like a quiet leader. Like, will take the guys under his shoulder or under his wing and everything, and just making sure they're taking care of, making sure they're acclimated. Jordan Clarkson was a big, now he's no longer here, but was a big part of that too. Like, just a lot of those veterans who may not be ideally the best fit for this team, but they've been places before. I mean, Jordan Clarkson went to the NBA Finals with the Cavs and LeBron's last year, and granted, didn't play great, but that's experience for him. And like, Kevin Love was there for 4 years in a row. Tristan Thompson was there for 4 years in a row. Delly was there, right, and won a championship. Like,
and also just experience like of the day-to-day life in the NBA, right?
Yeah. Like
dealing with travel, yeah, managing money, and everything that comes into it that,
yeah,
we don't typically think of. Having those guys around him is very good. And I do think that when you look at what seems like a steal, like I think the upside that you have with Kevin Porter Jr. is different than what you would typically get at that position in the draft. Yes,
100%.
This wasn't a strong draft. Yes, the next draft isn't very strong either. But getting the right guys into the system, developing them, Darius Garland looking good recently, it's encouraging. Like, you just want to do well. It doesn't look like – and I know people were concerned about Garland just a few weeks ago even. I don't think that the Cavs have drafted a bust. I don't think that they've drafted a bust last year or this year. I think the Windler, Garland, KPJ, and Sexton, I think that they all have a place in the NBA. And they seem to be guys that are receptive to coaching to some extent.
Excuse me. Yeah, no, I would agree. You and I have talked about in the past, like, if Sexton charts out as a career sixth man at eighth overall, that's not a bad pick. Mm-hmm. People were freaking. I mean, maybe it's just Cleveland sports, because people overreact to everything in this town.
And some of it also has to do with just that pick being the return for Kyrie.
That too. But even with like Garland, people were ready to write him off as a bust. And I think maybe the Steph Curry comparisons kind of got people a little too hyped too fast. But I do make this point to people. He played five bad teams when he was at Vanderbilt, and then had knee surgery, and then we learned later on that he had other surgeries on the same knee. And
yeah,
the cleanup, and he was off for a year, misses training camp, misses the better part of preseason, and then he's thrown right into the fire on opening night as the starting point guard, and he's 19 years old. Mm-hmm. Pump the brakes a little bit. Let him get
He's a high school to pro prospect. He is a high school to pro prospect.
Exactly.
And I'm encouraged by Sexton lately. Like, I like the fact that even though his three isn't falling, he is now understanding that, hey, there are very few players in the NBA that want this. Like, nobody looks at me and says, you know what, I want to stay in front of this guy all game. Like, you'll have your psychopaths, you'll have your Patrick Beverleys, but he is now making the defense. They have to be honest. Like, he's not letting them off the hook with jump shots. He's getting into the paint and he's just attacking the basket. He's relentless out there. And I like seeing that. Even though the playmaking isn't necessarily there, even though the three-point shooting, I'd like to see it. When he's playing like this and he's assertive like this, and it's not just against the bad teams. He did this against Toronto. I loved his game against Toronto.
I did too.
It's very, very encouraging, and it makes him someone that is conducive. You can have him out there and play winning basketball, which is really nice to see. Did you just wipe out there?
No. You know, I was I had my headphone case in my hand and I dropped it on my laptop. So we're all good. It's not the pop filter incident all over again.
I was about to say we can go ASMR again. I'm perfectly comfortable with that.
I don't know. If Carter gives us a listen with his newborn in the room, I don't want to ruin her already.
I think that's good for development. I think it is. Because there's not going to be any comprehension of what's going on, but I feel like that's good child development. And I'm an expert on this subject.
Hey, if you're the expert, I mean, by all means, you can take the floor and just give Carter parenting advice on his podcast while he's away.
I think that's going to be the pivot of this podcast is me just giving Carter parenting advice. I think that's what the future of this is.
I mean, you raised a dog. A dog's like a child, so there you go.
Well, I guess technically she was actually trained before we got her, unfortunately. So, yeah. I won't bring that out to him, and I'll just. I'll just say that. Yeah. I'm trained. I can pull this off.
There you go.
One thing I want to touch on before we wrap things up is Woj did mention that the Cavs are now actively looking to move some of these veterans, that this is kind of just the start, this Jordan Clarkson trade. So that kind of got my wheels turning, because now that Clarkson's out, and we saw some of it tonight, Brandon Knight getting some minutes. I don't know how much him actually playing changes what his value is on the open market. Like, I think some teams are going to take a flyer on him. If I can get even a second, I'm probably pretty okay with that. But I'm curious to get your thoughts on which veterans you expect to move next.
Next, it might be another small trade, like you just said, with Brandon Knight. I don't think.
That's the guy that I'm thinking. Thinking Brandon Knight.
Yeah, no, I think Brandon Knight too, because I'm just looking at like just expiring contracts right now. Dellavedova, I don't think is going to get moved because his shot has completely abandoned him, and I think the Cavs are a little bit tactful in the idea that he is a fan favorite. Every time he does check in, the people that are at the games do cheer a little louder than they do for most of the players. So you keep somebody who can keep the casual fan engaged, because I think the big whale, Kevin Love, is more likely going to get moved by the deadline at this point. So like you got to keep the casual fans engaged. I think Deli's going to stay, but just to jump onto my next point, I think Kevin Love is going to be on his way out of town. I think there are plenty of teams that are interested in him. And I think a lot of people kind of blow things out of proportion that, oh, he's not worth anything.
And it's also in team's best interest to try to depress the market to some extent.
Yeah, just a little bit. So I think Tristan Thompson might stay, because you and I have talked about this, but he really likes it here. And I think he likes being a mentor. And you've told me that he's hoping to get an extension. I mean, I think he could stay here. Then if you really want to break it down, like John Henson might be on his way out too, because his contract is super palatable and he kind of does a little bit of everything, which, you know, is nice. He had 7 blocks the other night against Memphis, and tonight he finished with 6 points, 4 rebounds, 3 blocks in 19 minutes, and has shown an ability to stroke it from 3-point range. Like, there's a contender that, or even just a playoff team that would be willing to kick the tires on that. And you could get a second round pick or something of value for it. But Cleveland's full on in asset acquisition mode. And I think they're just going to try and give the kids as much burn as they can at this point. And
I agree. You know, I'm still calling Phoenix. I'm calling Phoenix because I think that that's a place that, one, Kevin would like to play. Two, yeah. I'm reading the tea leaves, especially with Channing pushing for it so hard. Channing's pushing for it over Portland, even though he lives in Portland.
And he works for the Blazers.
Yeah, you got James Jones there, who great connection with Kevin Love. They have a good relationship. It's exactly. Just a team that makes sense because they're not going to attract free agents. They're in a very similar situation to us in that way. I think that even though it's not an ideal fit, I still think it's a nice fit with DeAndre Ayton. I think that it makes sense there. You reignite him with Ricky Rubio. And one thing that I found funny, I was listening to Zach Lowe, and he was mentioning, well, you know, Clint Capela, he was played off the floor against the Warriors, but the Warriors don't exist anymore, and there's no teams that really play five out. And I'm like, that's true, but why are we talking about this, or why are we talking this way with Clint Capela, but we don't with Kevin Love? Like, Kevin Love was perfectly fine in the 2017 and 2018 finals as well, but he can play defensively at the four. The problem is when teams go five out and he has to defend in space. Or more specifically, five out when you have five fringe, like either Hall of Famers or fringe Hall of Fame type talents out there, which was what the Warriors had. That team doesn't exist. If you put them with the defensive center, you can have a competent defense out there. You're not going to be exposed in that way. And I think that it would make sense for Phoenix to take a chance on him.
No, I would totally agree with that. Phoenix or Miami makes a lot of sense. Maybe him and Jimmy Butler can smooth over the whole fake workout warrior attitude. But I think
the only thing about Miami is just them protecting their space with Giannis.
Yeah, that's
because
somebody pointed that out to me. Yeah, well, yeah, he is. And maybe he got Kevin a little riled up. Emphasis on the term riled.
Look at you go.
I know. It's been hanging out with you too much. It's just, I think Phoenix makes them, that'd be the most attractive trade package, but Miami makes a lot of sense too. Denver, I'm just going off teams at the top of my head that are publicly known to have expressed interest. Denver would be neat with Jokic, but I don't know what kind of package Cleveland could get because I don't think Gary Harris is available.
No, I don't think Denver makes any sense. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting.
I don't know.
We have a bit of a tough, not a tough stretch, but we're playing some playoff teams now. You play Boston. I think we got a game against Minnesota. That's certainly winnable. Play Toronto, then again, Charlotte, OKC, and things kind of go easier from there. So I'm curious to see how the Cavs perform here. I think that they've built some positive momentum, and that's the type of thing you need if you want to pull off a good team, especially playing Boston in the afternoon, those sloppy afternoon games. Who knows? Maybe they can pull out some magic there. That'd be a lot of fun. But, you know, I'm encouraged about where this team is. I think the Clarkson domino falling is kind of a breath of fresh air. I feel like, okay, there's one less question we have to think about. And the freedom that the young guys are going to have really, really helps things out.
No, I totally agree. And it's, I'm looking at their schedule now. Like Boston, like you said, could be winnable because it's 4 o'clock and then Eastern. And then Minnesota, that could be a win. Toronto is pretty beat up right now. So
yeah, you know what? I forgot about that.
Crazy things could happen. So
Kyle Lowry on New Year's Eve. You never know. He could already be getting into the buffet.
Yep, there you go. Or he's got to go watch Villanova play or something. I don't know. But no, it'll be a fun stretch to wrap the year. And
wraps the year.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, wow. Man, I'm just on fire and I didn't even know it. But no, it'll be interesting. And then you keep just going down the list a little bit, and then there's a nice bumpy stretch against Denver, LA, and LA, and that'll probably put things back into perspective for everyone. So there you go.
You know what? I'm looking forward to it. Evan, thank you so much for coming on. People, as I mentioned, Evan, you can check him out on Forbes and also check him out on Locked On Cavs, even though they're our rivals. You know what? I'll still recommend that you go check it out because it's different styles, right? Like it's all part of the whole Cavs coverage buffet. Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's just boys supporting boys at the end of the day. And I know you and Carter both said I'm now your enemy, but it means a lot for you to extend the olive branch just to have me on. because maybe everybody else said no and you're like, all right, I guess.
Well, I'm trying to give you a taste of what it could have been if you said no to Chris and you took advantage of Carter being out. I mean, I was fully ready to ship him off to Utah. But you just jumped the gun. You went all over Manning's offer and you didn't shop around for the best deal. And that's what really hurt me. That's what let me down.
But to be fair, I did tell you that if you and I hosted a podcast on a bi-weekly basis, it would be so positive that people would get sick of us right away, because I can never match Carter's just dry cynicism and analysis that it's truly unique. And congratulations again to him and his wife and the rest of his family.
Yeah. Congratulations to his family. Look, all the best to his daughter that now has to grow up in a house full of negativity with Carter. And you say that a podcast full of positivity is a bad thing, Evan. I'm here for the optimism, especially when you have a night like tonight where the boys go out there and they combine for 61 points. That was a lot of fun. So thank you so much for coming on, Evan. Folks, if you're not following Evan on Twitter, do so now. Follow him at amnotevan, all one word. Look at him. Find his readings, his writings at Forbes. Listen to him at Locked On Cavs. And if you want to support this guy that cannot talk, you can do so by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Check out the Chase Down premium feed. We really would love your support there, but do not feel pressured. It's just, as I said, it's supporting us directly, and we got some bonus content there. I do a weekly recap of the Cavs young guys. So check that out. Also, leave your ratings and reviews and all that for Locked On Cavs. It's the best way to help out our podcast, folks. And if you want to be part of our Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of your review to chasedownpod@gmail.com, and we will send you a link to that Discord chat. So thanks, Evan. Thank you to all our listeners. Have a happy holidays. And as always, go Cavs.